two women in the studio, Heidi and Melissa. As I said, two comedians, two lesbians, and, well, let's start. Both of you, they both belong to First City Improv, Sketch and Improv Troupe? Group?
Troupe.
Troupe. And then Heidi does stand up on her own as well at various comedy clubs around town. And Melissa is making money now. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, but not with the comedy.
Not with comedy, no, that's true. Not with comedy. So, speaking of making
plasticine.
Money. Plasticine. What, you're a sculpture? Oh. They're going to do a couple of improv sketches for us a bit later, but first we want to talk about what it is to be, well, to be a comedian, first of all. The kind of stamina and...
glib tongue and endurance.
Yeah, and the quick-wittedness and how you've got to be on when you're on stage. You were talking just before we came on the show about sometimes getting really panicked before going on stage, and that must be rough to deal with sometimes, so...
Well, yeah. Every once in a while it's kind of rough. No, working last night, I worked a room of about 175 people, and indeed I was very panicked. It wasn't 175 lesbians, unfortunately. It was 175. It's a mainstream club here in town. And I was indeed panicked before going on. I didn't want to go on. I said to myself, I'm never ever going to do this again, ever. And then of course I went on and had a good set, and then wanted to go on again and again and do more and continue for the rest of my life doing this. But the next time I have a show,
it could be the same panic.
Right.
What mostly you're doing mainstream clubs.
That's right. There aren't any lesbian stand-up clubs that I know about here in Montreal. But yeah, mostly for a stand-up comic, that's really all they have is mainstream clubs. There's Yuck Yucks out of Toronto. There's the Comedy Nest here in Montreal. Unless you go down to Provincetown or San Francisco or places like that, maybe New York, I'm not sure, you're not going to be able to hone your material to a mainstream club.
A hone lesbian material?
No, not at all. No, right.
So that makes the way that you relate to the audience quite different. But also, what kind of questions would they ask for improv as a straight audience as opposed to a gay audience? You had an experience, too, in Montreal where you were playing to In the Blue Dog, which I believe was a benefit for CKUT, and it was a gay variety show. Yes. So what kind of reactions, compare the two audiences and how they would ask you to do various things.
Well, very much in a straight mainstream club, when you get lesbian yelled out, it's very much in a derogatory sense. Mm-hmm. When you're in at the Blue Dog, for instance, and you're asked to play a lesbian character, the audience wants you themselves to be represented on stage, and they wanna relate to the lesbian on stage instead of laughing at a lesbian on stage. As is what happens.
Yeah, when a straight audience asks us to do something lesbian, it almost seems like a dare.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Let's see if they're really going to do it, and what are they going to do?
Do they recognize that you're lesbian on stage, the straight audience? Are you open about that?
No.
We're not open about it, but we certainly don't hide it. No, we don't come on stage with our triangles or anything like that. Like they'd understand anyway, but we certainly don't go on stage and parade around. But everybody who works within the club, other comics in the club, the club owners, they all know that we're lesbians. We don't hide it from them, no.
So, for example, the mainstream audience, when they look at you, why would they sort of yell out to be lesbians? Do they suspect that you are, or do they want some sort of titillation?
They'll
see two women on stage, and we often just ask them to participate in the game that we're playing and yell suggestions out, and very often in the straight audience, the suggestions are sexual.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I don't believe that Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, when they were two men in comedy duo with each other, were ever asked to do gay routines in the way that, as two women, they would ask you. That's interesting. In a lot of ways, where do you feel most female comedians are coming from? We were discussing this earlier, and your perceptions of female comedians in relation to each other and the jokes that they tell?
Well, back in the 70s, and still very much today, female comics are very self-deprecating. It's not something that I really enjoy seeing, and I don't think that they represent women well as a whole. But that's where your humor comes in, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that funny. But what I would like to see is more gender-specific humor that even a man could do, a woman doing humor that even a man could take and do it himself. That's the type of humor I like to see. Or if you want to start doing lesbian material, again, you can't do it in a mainstream club. You'd have to take it out to a more of an underground club, maybe benefits.
Is it just because a mainstream audience, they're simply not ready to listen to gay positive or lesbian oriented comedy? Well, what kind of reaction would you get, do you figure? I mean, is it a typical kind of redneck reaction that you're expecting?
Yeah.
That you would get?
Very definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And often they just wouldn't get it. You know?
Yeah, that's true, too.
They don't, where's the joke or what is she talking about?
Right.
Exactly. It's interesting because, like, Lily Tomlin and Sandra Bernhard, they're both did concert films, and they both make references to gay communities in their film. Sandra Bernhard, Without You I'm Nothing, and Lily Tomlin, her film. And Lily Tomlin is quite obviously gay, and had, you know, this her the stage manager was made reference to that, and also Sandra Bernhard made reference as well. So it is coming into films, but it's not coming into a broader spectrum.
For sure, but the mainstream audiences at the Comedy Nest wouldn't go see their films, I don't think. Do you see what I mean? And whereas they're going out to the Comedy Nest to laugh with their buddies, to joke with their buddies about guy stuff, or, you know, even females, you know, putting lots of makeup on or something like that, you know, but nothing.
How does it measure up a ratio of male to female comedians, generally?
Well, I can't hardly name any.
Last night there was, I believe, 12 comics, and two of them were women.
Mm-hmm. And with the last, Just for Laughs festival, we were speaking about this too. What kind of representation did they have in that festival of women comedians?
Well, that I know of, I think there was five that I know of. There was Roseanne Barr, Jane Curtin, Mary Tyler Moore. And then a couple of lesser comics, but I and two, like two. So what, you know, and none of them that I knew about were lesbian. So it was sort of disheartening for me, and for some of my friends. We wanted to go see some, you know, lesbian.
Because Jane Curtin's had a quite spotted career. I mean, she's gone from being sort of in the cutting edge of early Saturday Night Live to Kate and Ally, where she plays another character altogether. Mm-hmm. I don't know what type of work she's doing now, but I wonder if any of these people, whether they're feminist-based or not. I know that Roseanne Barr comes out with some things, but what do you feel about that?
Roseanne Barr is basic, like, housewife humor. And even some self-deprecating stuff. I really shouldn't be speaking for her, but what the heck. So that's not a show I would go see. Now I'm starting to sound really snobby, and I don't mean to, but it's
I would really
like to see. And again, it's hard for lesbians to come out in terms of comedy, because there aren't that many clubs for us as women, as lesbians, to hone our material.
Because basically, your material comes from your experience, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And if your experience obviously revolves around being lesbian, then that's an awful lot of your life that you can't include in your act. So how do you reconcile that? How does an act come together for you?
Well, it's very hard. I mean, I've been working at it for 3 years, and I still have, you know, my 10 minutes. I don't have the same 10 minutes. I've been honing a 10-minute act, but there's things that I just cross right out of my book. You know, that I can't do that on stage, can't do this on stage, that I'd like to, and that goes into my lesbian book that I will eventually do someday when I do move down to Provincetown or San Francisco, or when I do that. But at this point, it's
Montreal has more of a gay comedy scene happening.
Exactly.
Is that a possibility, from what you know of industry?
Not that I know
no.
of. It's difficult. I think maybe Melissa wouldn't, or myself, whatever, would want to speak about how difficult it is.
It's hard enough just keeping a woman's bar open, never mind specializing in a comedy
lesbian
bar.
Comedy.
And then there's the English French thing, and you've got, you know, the English community and the French community, and I don't see it happening. I mean, it's being negative, but I think I could see it happening at functions or dances or, you know, benefits and things.
Well, there's certainly a desire for it there when I think of the opening of Madonna. The number of gay women who went to see that opening
right,
night.
For sure.
I mean, it opened in seven cinemas across Montreal,
right.
Or Without You or Nothing. I mean, the guffaws coming from the audience when she made very pointed jokes about subculture things that only gay audiences would know about political correctness, but at the same time. So people really are dying for this information and dying for good comedians. But it's just a matter of giving them venues, allowing them to hone material.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a process. I think it'll happen soon. Not tomorrow, but I think it'll happen soon.
Referring back to this article, we picked up an article from the Gazette, and it was talking about the Just for Laughs Festival. And it says that the Funny Gay Males was a very different show, because there was much less profanity, more humility, less aggression, and not a single joke demeaning to women or racial minorities. So they're saying the entire festival, it was the funny gay males who came out with things that were not deprecating other groups. So I think that's quite essential that there is a voice found for women comedians such as yourselves to have that forum, to combat Just for Laughs. I've seen a couple of shows of Just for Laughs, and with the exception of some of the mime stuff, which is really clever and extraordinary, some of the verbal humor is very pointed, and they just go for the nearest target.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the idea of sort of the easy humor of just attacking people for racist or homophobic reasons? I mean, are there other comedians? There are ways of getting around that, but how would you work around that in what you're doing? I mean, you have to be self protective, yet at the same time, do you think that there will ever be an opportunity for you to speak about yourself to mainstream audiences and have that accepted? Or?
I hope so. I certainly hope so.
I hope so. I think it's how you hand it to them. You know, you can get up in the soapbox and try and preach and bang them over the heads with your ideas, but that might not necessarily work.
We don't want to do that.
No.
So how do
go ahead. Sorry. No, but these guys that you know go for the common denominator and the easy laugh, they're making a living. I mean, whether they have the awareness or not, or their consciences allow them to do, is they're out there to make a living, and it's what makes people laugh. You know, it's not saying that they're any worse than the audience that's laughing at what they're saying.
It's just such a pathetic reflection, really.
Isn't
it
terrible? There's, for those of you listening, maybe you've heard of this comic Jerry Sadowich, who was in the audience a couple of days, who was performing, and somebody in the audience a couple of days ago jumped on stage and started hitting him because he was just so offensive. And I performed on the same night with this man, and I was just absolutely... I can't even articulate how upset I was, and there was a few feminists in the audience that actually got up and left the show because this man was he had brought a blow up doll on stage with him, and he was hitting it, and he was just swearing every second word of his. He was swearing, and he is considered the funniest man in Scotland according to the London Times or something like that. And that is just, I'm dumbfounded.
And you had to follow this guy?
No, I didn't. There's a buffer in between. There was another comic and then myself. I did okay, but the poor guy that was in between us just, he held his own, but I mean, certainly. And what I think what upset me the most was that the audience was going nuts.
Yes.
They really enjoyed it, and I just,
It's interesting. They quite often say that political cartoons are the sign of the times and that they contain more history. And also, comedy is a reflection of the times. So when we're going back into the neo-right, the comedy that reflects the Reagan era, the Bush era, is a comedy. I think people are so frightened now of those minorities taken over, especially with the politically correct going off and the Visigoths storming sentinel of conservatism. People finally demanding the rights that they've been denied for so many years. It's interesting to see the reaction reactionary kind of comedy such as that would be, such as Sadowich coming on stage and was he actually pummeling this doll?
Or? Oh yeah, oh
and
yeah.
It was a woman. It was a blown up
female. Yeah.
One of those sort of pornographic.
Fucking nation, fucking nation, yeah. Fucking cunt. Every second word was fucking cunt, fucking cunt. And
all in the name of a good laugh.
Yeah.
But I just didn't see the humor.
No.
I didn't even see
well,
the humor.
But everybody else seemed to.
So how do you psych yourself up then for an audience like that after you've seen
you
what
they
laugh at?
You just have to bite your tongue and do it. On several occasions I've been there has been a very derogatory lesbian joke told, and then the joke gets a big laugh. Now give a big warm welcome to your next guest, Heidi Foss from from Montreal, and I'll walk on stage, and again I have to. As I walk towards the stage, I have to go through a whole new process of warming myself up. To get on stage and deal with an audience that obviously doesn't approve of who I really am, but if they had laughed at that joke. And so it's
hard when you hate your audience.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. You gotta
You're
love
supposed
your audience.
To get up there and make them laugh, make them like you. And
what is the definition of working an audience? Could be to describe working an audience and what that means?
I mean, a comedian's rapport with the audience is quite extraordinary. It differs a lot from some performance, but particularly the music industry, where you're aware of the audience, but often musicians don't even see their audience or plays. But as comedians, you're very in tune to what the audience is looking at and what they're laughing at and what they're listening to?
Well, certainly if I was up there and I was bombing.
Yeah, what happens
the
then?
Way I would rework it, or I would try and rework it, is I wouldn't get aggressive with them. I wouldn't say, well, you're not intelligent, you don't understand my jokes. I would bring it back to myself. And I would, you know, say something like, well, that's a keeper, you know, or whatever, and work it back on myself so that, and I think an audience is much more accepting of that than just being really aggressive with them and trying to, you know, make them look like the idiots. Mm. And you see that very often. I've seen it.
More often with men. I don't know. I haven't seen that many women, but, I mean, I remember a few nights at the club where things got really aggressive between comic and audience member.
Yeah, and some comics can get very, sort of pig-headed and snobbish, and I don't think that's the way to go. I think you have to, I wouldn't say, you know, cater to the lowest common denominator, but also if, you know, it's not working and you're up there for 5 minutes, just, you have to try and work the audience, you mm-hmm. have to try and do
whether
it, even if you hate them.
Yeah.
You know, that's your job, is to get up there and make them laugh, and if you hate them, like I said, you bite your tongue, and if worse comes to worse, it's never happened to me. I've never actually walked off stage, although the other night when I was with Jerry Sadowish, I was questioning whether or not I should actually walk on stage. But then I wanted the audience to see a half-decent representation of a female comic after this
yeah,
person.
Yeah,
And you have to question yourself whether or not, like, I would boycott going on stage, or girl con, whatever you want, you know.
Well, that is a dilemma, really, because
right.
either you don't go on and you make your statement by not being there, or somehow you go on stage and you make your statement by being there, which
exactly.
is a lot more immediate.
Right.
Except then the frustration must sort of well up inside sometimes, because maybe you're not saying exactly what you want to say
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
what just happened.
But again, I don't ever want to be a soapbox.
No.
I would
no.
rather be a soapbox by just being there, my presence being seen, than by getting up on stage and saying, I can't believe you all just laughed at that, you're all idiots and stuff like that.
No, it's got to be a...
And there's no reason. I think the idea of the double-edged sword is to come up and convince people otherwise.
Exactly,
and
right.
Humor,
yeah.
And, I mean, through whimsy and through humor, one can say so many things that are so much more politically complicated than if you just said through, just said them directly. So anyway, it's time to
go
to some music.
Well, we're going to have some music, and we're going to come back and talk about this concept of entertaining.
Back to Dykes on Mics, and this is 90.3 FM CKUT, and we're talking to two women comedians, Heidi and Melissa. And we're going to play a couple of improv games, but we wanted to come back and mention that something that we noted in the past with Sinead O'Connor refusing to come on Arsenio Hall because of Andrew Dice Clay, who is renowned for homophobic jokes, and is making absolutely mega dollars doing it, and has a concert film out documenting his off-color and base jokes against minorities. So, anyway, back to Dykes and Mics.
Well, I think we're going to do an improv game now. So one of you two would perhaps introduce the rules to the audience and...
Okay, yeah, what we're going to do right now has never been done before. It's completely unrehearsed and not scripted. We're going to play a game called Emotional Roller Coaster. What's going to happen is Deborah and Elizabeth are going to act as our audience members. They are going to, throughout the course of the scene that Melissa and I are going to do, they are going to yell out emotions, either Heidi, angry, or Melissa, upset, whatever. They're going to yell out emotions, completely unscripted. We don't know what they're going to yell out. And we have to incorporate those emotions into the course of the scene that we're doing. So if they just want to give us a non-geographical location to go with, and...
Bus stop.
We're at a bus stop.
Bus stop.
Okay.
Try and imagine a bus stop, please.
Oh, Jesus Christ, when's that goddamn bus gonna get here?
Heidi Blase.
Who cares? I don't know.
I care. I've got somewhere to go. I got somewhere to be. I'm not supposed to be standing here.
You're kind of uptight, man. Why don't you try and relax a bit? Here, take some tranquilizers.
Oh? What are you doing walking around with a pocket full of tranquilizers? Are you a drug dealer?
Well, as a matter of fact, I am. Can I get you anything?
Melissa's sexually interested.
Well, listen, Cookie, as a matter of fact, there's a couple of things you can get me. You can get me a little peck on the cheek. How about a little peck on the cheek, Cookie?
Well, I don't know, honey. Let me take a tranquilizer first, and then
There we go.
Heidi happy.
Okay. Well, can I do both cheeks or just one? There's one cheek, and can I do the other? There we go. There's the other cheek.
Hey, your cheeks smell good. Do you use perfume or anything like that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do.
What kind of perfume do you use?
Melissa, confused.
It comes in a bottle.
Oh, I think I know the kind you're talking about. The one in the bottle.
Called bottle perfume.
Heidi, despairing.
Bottle perfume.
Yeah. It's a bottle. Oh, no, something from a magazine.
Well, do you know what? What kind of magazine? So if I wanted to buy this bottle perfume, I could buy myself and I wouldn't have to come to you?
Melissa, hyper-intelligent.
Well, as a matter of fact, yeah. If you look in a set of encyclopedias, any old set of encyclopedias, you'll find that if you look under perfume, they'll give you a formula to create your very own,
But I don't know how to read.
Heidi fucked up.
Melissa's ecstatic.
You laughing at my stupidity? Is that what you're doing? Oh my God! I don't have any more tranquilizers left. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do?
You know what you're gonna do?
What?
I've never met anybody like you. Yeah, I've met some stupid people, but you've gotta be the stupidest person I've ever met. You know what I'm gonna do for you?
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna pay your bus fare. Really? You and I are gonna ride this bus right to the end of the line, Cookie. And then you know what we're gonna do?
What are we gonna do?
We're gonna get off, get back on, and ride it again.
Heidi, you drunk.
Well, do they have like a bar in these buses? Because I'm not gonna go on a bus if it doesn't have a bar.
Melissa, astonished.
A bar?
Well, yeah, you know, waitresses walk by and they give you stuff, like drinks and stuff, and you can drink and all that and stuff.
Does this street look like a runway to you? You think we're getting on an airplane?
Heidi, sober.
No. As a matter of fact, I've got to be at the airport in 5 minutes. What the hell am I doing here at this bus stop? Ow, cabby, ow. Boop.
That's it.
End of scene.
We're going to go to
Dykes and Mics and Quadraphonic Stereo with a 360-degree microphone with two female comedians and two interviewers on either side. It's kind of terrifying. And it's a small room full of four people, and we're laughing.
And it's hot.
It's hot. Mm-hmm. And we'll just quote something from the Funny Gay Males, which I thought was pretty good. Parents of homosexuals go through 3 stages of acceptance. 1, they don't talk about it. 2, they talk about it. 3, they talk about it on Oprah. So, I don't know. I haven't seen anything come out of my family yet.
Well, onward. We're going to talk about the nature of improv now.
Well, basically, improv is a scene and narration based on audience suggestions. So you sort of fly by the seat of your pants, basically. It's fly or die.
It must be pretty exhilarating.
Sometimes it's the worst experience ever.
It's almost like being out of control when you're up there and you have the audience yelling things out at you, you know, suggestions and...
Sometimes we have to have a filter if we're playing such games as Emotional Roller Coaster and immediately somebody will say, Heidi happy, Heidi horny, and you have to make, although that wouldn't be that much of a transition. okay, Heidi happy, Heidi paranoid, say, and you have to make a transition right away, and sometimes you have 3 or 4 people yelling an emotion to you at the same time, and we sometimes have to have a filter.
Somebody
on the side of the stage who will take one of those emotions and filter it to us and say, Heidi, you know, paranoid.
Okay, so the filter will choose one of the emotions throw it at you.
Well, the first one they hear.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Basically, it goes on the first thing we hear, no matter what it is. So.
When you're doing improv, it looks to me, or it sounds to me, from what I've seen and heard, is very much... a reflex thing, mm-hmm. where you're not really operating, you're not thinking.
No, you can't. Mm-hmm. As soon as you start editing yourself, you're done. You can't do it, and that's why sometimes it's actually quite difficult. In terms of feminist comedy, it's quite difficult because we feminists have our own little rules and regulations about certain words in terms of being politically correct. And what happens is you have to start editing yourself if you want to perform in front of feminists. And as much as I would love to do that and did love to do it the last time, I can't help but being afraid when I'm performing in front of them that I'm going to say something politically incorrect. And that's when you have to start editing yourself and have to watch what you say.
And you care a little bit more about what the audience is thinking of you, you know?
Of course.
It's like you're doing a straight crowd and they're basically anyway.
But sometimes it's
really
just not
care what they think. So.
Right.
So both audiences then require some
of
sort
course,
of censorship.
Of course, yeah. Of course they do. But that's what makes it exciting. And
I guess, but we were talking about this before too. Okay, let's go out on a limb, you know. But a lot of the feminist, particularly academic agenda, is based very much on theory and the serious, just because of the serious nature of like the oppressions that are being dealt with.
Of course.
And but often there doesn't seem to be enough room for the entertainment value, and entertainment meaning maybe sense of humor, and capturing an audience with entertainment, with sense of humor, and once people are entertained, they are listening. And so is that some sort of goal or agenda for you as well, I suppose, when you do comedy? And we talked about not, you don't want to be a soapbox ever, but the idea of sort of having an audience listening to you. And then manipulating them, I guess, through your material.
Right. I don't think I would ever want to manipulate, certainly, a feminist audience. But, I mean, certainly manipulating a mainstream audience into...
I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah. Into just seeing that women can be funny. I don't think
without
feminists...
Without talking about
right,
their thighs
exactly,
and their breasts
exactly.
And
no, menstruation. I don't think feminists have a problem with that. I think feminists know. Certainly, I mean, there's so many... women and gay women who are funny. I mean, just the people I've met
in
since I've come out, they're just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
We're very funny, but it's hard that when you're on stage and you're trying to be funny and there are people in the audience who are, you know, very much criticizing every word that comes out of your mouth and you just have to bite your tongue or actually not edit yourself and then kick yourself for saying something and then not being able to live with yourself later because you've been politically incorrect or something like that. Now obviously I don't think we have ever really offended anybody.
Not yet, no.
And
we hope to.
and certainly we're trying our best to be as politically correct as we can. But we've all been brought up in this society, and let's hope that if there are occasions when we aren't politically correct, we can be forgiven.
But also recognizing the limitations of political correctedness as well.
Right, right.
And how that can, in fact, really inhibit you.
Right, hamper creativity, of course.
There is a whole category of humor done by women I could do without, and that's the humor about body size and body image. And I think particularly of Kathy, that news strip that appears in the Globe and Mail again, comic strip, and constantly she's referring to her dieting, binging, and it's simply not of interest. And I don't believe that someone who's working in any profession is so obsessed with their physical appearance in that way. She is. I mean,
right.
She has very few other thoughts rather than her boyfriend, Erwin, and her body size. And this can't be representative of the work she does.
Right.
And so I think that's something that outside of political correctness or outside of our understanding of what that is, it is a category of humor that not enough people have explored and just taken the piss out of. I mean, deflated that balloon.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not interesting to hear. And men really do not talk about their physical size and their weight. And
they talk about women's physical size.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is something that perhaps we, as an idea, we could just try to deflate. But it's just another avenue of expression, I suppose, or against an avenue of expression. When you work an audience and people react to you, do you feel where they're coming from politically? I mean, is that something important to you? Do you play to their tastes, or do you simply do what you want and have your own style?
No, I certainly don't play to their tastes. No, I play to my own tastes, and of course, there's part of what I do that has to cater to them on some level or another, i.e. simply not coming out as a comic, as a stand-up comic, would be one way in which I've done that. But I am able to judge my audience more from what they're laughing at other comedians than what they're laughing at my stuff. I will often see them laughing at a comic that I have a really hard time with. And then I'll think, oh, they're not gonna like me. Oh, boy.
But very often they do.
So they surprise you.
Exactly.
So it is a more tolerant audience than you suspect quite often.
Yeah,
I think it's easy to underestimate the audience.
Oh, it is very easy to underestimate the audience.
Well, they're always being underestimated, but we were talking about the lowest denominator catering to that. So obviously they, you know, often they are being catered to and underestimated, and they disappoint time and time again by laughing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have a more intelligent approach to your comedy, then you are then reflecting that onto the audience
right.
and making them understand
exactly.
that the world doesn't revolve around cunt jokes and thigh jokes and
right.
stupid, tedious parodies of, you know, human beings.
So let's go to some music now and then come back with an improv skit. Well, we're back to Dykes on Mike's 90.3 FM, and we just had a phone call for a woman who walked out of the show. And she said she just didn't know what to do. So maybe we could discuss
out of which show?
The Sadowitz show.
Good.
So maybe we can talk about what do you do when you see something so offensive that you'll have to walk out? What would you do as an audience member or as a comedian yourself? How would you respond? What would you suggest that to this audience member that she
walked out because she didn't know what else to do?
In the future, what should she do if she is offended?
She could demand her money back, even?
For sure, demand your money back. I don't think the approach that was taken the other day by jumping up on stage and actually hitting the comedian as an audience member did it. I don't think that was the proper way to approach it, because I don't think at that point anybody had said anything. I don't think the audience was upset at all. Or had given any indication that they were upset. I think what they had done was they had just all of a sudden somebody just lost it completely and jumped up on stage and started hitting the comedian. I think.
So some sort of verbal exchange first. I mean, you say I'm offended, or you say I want my money back, but you make it known that this is offensive to you.
You boo, you throw.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I think
it's a very macho thing to kind of just, you know, get up and beat the shit out of somebody because they insulted your wife or they looked at your girlfriend wrong. Or
yes, silence.
Is that kind of attitude?
Although I definitely felt it running through my veins the same night I
yeah, sure, of course, but did you act on it? You know?
Here I go getting inarticulate.
But it's particular to Quebec that this happened because of the man pummeled the other man because of anti-French jokes. Mm-hmm. Yet when the man was hitting the inflatable blow-up woman, no one responded.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this is except for the women walking out.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful way to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
He had some jokes about he actually had some jokes about women, feminists who wouldn't like this sort of feminists with short hair who wouldn't like this sort of humor.
Mm-hmm. Actually, when he was hitting the blow up doll, I think he was addressing it as a feminist who had complained about his material, and he hit the doll saying it's only comedy, it's just fucking comedy, bam, it's
fucking
comedy,
cunts,
bam.
Fucking cunts, fucking this.
So what he was hitting was a feminist. The doll
just
was
unbelievably
a woman
offensive.
That didn't like his
unbelievably
material.
Offensive in 1991.
From what I understood.
I wonder if he'll be taken to task by the Just for Laughs festival itself.
I don't think he's going to be invited back. In fact, but that I read in the paper that Andy Millman had said that no, he's not going to be invited back. But I mean, my question is, didn't anybody see this guy before they invited him here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he was just
process.
So.
Yeah, where the politics involved?
Of course, of course. And I had heard that the festival people were definitely looking for people who had intelligent comedy, who weren't looking for the base joke, who weren't going for the really.
Which is crazy in view of the reviews that are coming out.
And it all it seems to be is this one guy, and they're just focusing on. He's getting all the press.
Yeah,
he's getting all the press,
yeah.
Of course, and it's just.
So the other thing this woman could do who walked out is write a letter to the head of the festival.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And make it known that she was so offended. Well, perhaps we should go into the improv skit now.
Sure.
And
I'm ready
course,
for it.
And
sure.
This skit, given in the nature and in the whole tone of the radio program, is called Scandal.
Yeah, it's called Scandal. What's going to happen is Melissa and I are going to conduct an interview scene. I'll be the interviewer, and she'll be the interviewee. What we need from our audience is
an appreciative audience.
If they could suggest why that this interviewee is somehow morally prestigious, and we'll go through
Nobel laureate. And having discovered a vaccine for every ill known to mankind.
Humankind.
That's pretty noble.
Wow.
Humankind.
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 A vaccine, okay.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-da-bop. Hello, welcome back to our show. We're here today with the woman who has discovered every single vaccine that could possibly help womankind
here today on Earth planet. Would you like to introduce yourself to this audience?
Hello, my name is Claudia Van Houtnis Borthu, and I have, yes, as you say, discovered a cure for everything, actually. Unfortunately, I haven't discovered a cure for headaches. but I'm working on that now.
Of course. Well, that shouldn't be a long time coming. I'm sure you'll discover that vaccine any day now. In the meantime, I was passing by your house the other day, and I couldn't help noticing that you had painted every second blade of grass plaid. Now, a woman of your prestige, why would a woman do such a thing?
Well, it was very long and arduous task, as you must know, painting every second blade of grass. But what I'm hoping to do is to cut down on the world's population use, misuse and overuse of fabric. And what I would like to do is to weave these blades of grass to form a fabric that anyone could wear and anyone could grow. In your own backyard, you could step out, pick some grass, and make yourself a pair of golfing pants. Just like that. I think
of course,
it would be very beneficial.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yes.
One other thing, or perhaps a few other things. I read in a paper the other day that you had taken your nose hairs. Is that correct? You had taken your nose hairs, you had clipped them out of your nose, and you had run around a shopping mall sticking these nose hairs to the chins of little children.
Yes.
Now, how did that help in the promotion or the discovery of your vaccine? Could you perhaps give us a connection there?
Well, the connection is this. You see, there are children that prematurely develop facial hair. And I thought that perhaps by implanting facial hairs into the chins of these children, I could perhaps, by some miracle of science, reverse the nature, the process of this facial hair growing. Now, yes, there were some upset little children and some very, very angry parents, but after I finally calmed them down and convinced them that they must let these hairs stay implanted in the children's chins in order for me to complete my study, and in fact, weeks after I did this, the results were phenomenal. In fact, it's been actually years since I've done this, and these children have now grown into adults, adult males, with no facial hair.
That's marvelous!
And I've gotten millions of letters of thanks from very many women, well, millions from... I got very many letters of thanks from millions of... No, wait a minute. Never mind, I got a lot of letters from women.
I think we understand where you're coming from.
Happy to kiss a man with no facial hair.
I say, I have a little bit of a problem. I have some facial hair growing on my bottom.
Yes, I noticed that.
Did you? And you didn't say a thing.
Not I.
Listen, how would one combat the facial hair that I'm growing on my bottom? Do you perhaps have a vaccine, or have you discovered one?
I've not yet discovered one, but I am... I am being funded by various institutions to look into a cause, the cure for this thing, this epidemic, actually. There are very many, millions of people, many, very many people who are suffering from this ailment. And what it does is it causes them to develop ingrown hairs, ingrown facial hairs on their bottom. And of course, because it's an ingrown facial hair on the bottom, they're expected to go to dermatologists.
Right, I've tried that. And it has become quite embarrassing.
Yes.
I'm going to these dermatologists.
Estheticians in particular, because it's a facial hair, that's the word I was searching for before. So these salon chairs are not made for people to sit in with their bottoms up. You see, so it has...
I dare say they aren't.
No, not at all.
So that's the next project that you should work on. I mean, dump the headache epidemic. Go for the bottom facial hair.
I think I will. I think I will.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Very inspiring. Thank you.
Giggling dykes on mics. Ecstatic dykes on mics.
You have a great audience, boy.
Emotional roller coaster biting there.
What's phenomenal is that you can just carry on while everybody's howling all around you.
Including the operator behind three glasses of panes of glass and over
some
sort of switchboard. Yeah. So I guess this is Heidi and Melissa, and you guys are playing soon, aren't you? Rumor has it.
Okay, well, first of all, let's take 2 minutes. Making a living. Now, this is essential. What are the economics involved here? You've got to make a living. Heidi's a waitress. Melissa's a cook.
I'm a kitchen manager.
Kitchen manager.
Wait a minute.
Who also cooks.
Who cooks a lot.
And you're way up north in an Inuit village called?
Kujawaq.
Kujawaq. And so you're up there for a long period
of
time.
Yeah, I'm up there. I'm going to be up there for a while.
And when you're up there, you're not with First City down here.
No. And actually, it was hard the first few weeks up there because I'd gotten in the routine of rehearsing like three times a week with the troupe. And I went up there and there's absolutely none of that. No, happening. But what is kind of interesting is that I'm around children a lot at the hotel and just in the village in general. There seems to be a lot of kids up there. And they like playing. And, you know, while I'm working, I'm playing with the kids, basically, and I can do stuff that I would do with the troupe and be characters and be completely foolish and silly.
Kids.
With 10-year-old kids. No,
I mean, take that personally.
No, they laugh. I'm saying they laugh, you know? And they get a real kick out of it. So it's a nice, that's what I do up there. My kids.
Yeah, but okay, so you're still playing, you're still acting, and you're still laughing, right?
But in terms of making a living, it's very difficult to make a living in this. There are club comics who aren't even famous, who are making quite a decent six-digit figure living, and you never even hear about them. Mm. But where we're at, still where we're at, and in terms of trying to break into the mainstream with the integrity that we have, it's going to be difficult. So,
it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah,
I don't have this dream of becoming famous or very wealthy with this, but just the fact that it's in my life brings me so much joy. I mean.
Do you want to make a living?
If I could, it would be a bonus sort of thing.
Yeah.
But as long as I have an outlet or I have, you know, anything where I could just be a complete idiot and have somebody watching me.
Well, just, I guess, and using those instincts and the reflex, that must be, as I said before, quite exhilarating in some ways, mm-hmm. too. Just really letting yourself go, and you're just going to operate at that level mm-hmm. for the next little while. Mm. And same with being stand-up, right? You just go on stage and focus. Mm-hmm. And away you go.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully on an appreciative audience that's giggling into their sleeves, trying to knock over the microphone.
Comedian. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Melissa and Heidi are going to be... Do you want to plug your own?
Yeah, we're going to be performing tomorrow night at the Comedy Nest. That's 1459 Crescent Street above Sir Winston's club. Now, if you want to come down and support us as lesbians and you want to... catered to us as lesbians.
Or you just want to catch a glimpse of these two.
Sure, we won't be performing lesbian material tomorrow night, but if you as audience members want to make suggestions, that'd be lots of fun. Tomorrow night, come down around 9:30, or say 9 o'clock at 1459 Crescent Street, the Comedy Inn.
What are you going to be doing?
We're going to be playing improv games. Not just Melissa and I, we'll be with a troupe tomorrow night.
Yeah. How many are you in the troupe?
There's five of us.
Okay.
No, there's six of us.
No, there's seven of us.
No, there's...
Wait a minute. There's many, many of them. Millions.
Well, with Melissa coming and going, we have to sort of keep bringing people in.
Well, it depends on whether they're Nobel laureates.
Right.
And whether they have a cure for the common headache. So I guess this has been Dykes and Mikes.
Whoa.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Des étrangers, nos voix criblées de joie montaient de l'ombre, et nous écoutions nos cœurs chanter.